Is Data a blessing or a curse? Brought to you by Adastra, this is a must-listen podcast that inspires and advises people who are serious about digitalization. Welcome back to the Adastra podcast. I'm Ivana Karhanová, and today we're talking about how businesses change the way they work with data. Just a few years ago, most companies were stuck with old data systems that couldn't handle their growing needs. Today, everything's different. Companies are moving to the cloud and completely rethinking how they use their data. My guest today is Adam Wojtkowski, country manager of Eastern Europe from Snowflake. He works with big companies across Central and Eastern Europe, helping them move from old data systems to modern platforms. Adam sees firsthand how businesses are transforming the way they handle data. What's really interesting is that this isn't just about technology, it's about changing how companies think about data entirely. Welcome to the show, Adam.
Hello, Ivana. So first of all, thank you for having me, and I just wanted to stress out the collaboration with Adastra, a trusted partner in the Czech Republic, not only in the Czech Republic, by the way, as you do your business elsewhere. Congratulations on that, too.
Thank you so much. My first question, what I wanted to ask was, when you talk to companies or business leaders today versus a few years ago, how has the conversation about data changed, if they changed?
All right, so first of all, I'm here for 1.5 years only. But before that, before this job...
You've been working with data for a long time, right?
That's true. There are specific texts on data, so obviously, you know, in the past it was a little bit different than now. But anyways, it's the awareness level. The level of awareness by what's the value behind data is just totally different. It is a day and night change between how companies treat that as an asset between today and, say, a decade ago, right? So historically, it was just, you know, the thing that was kept in a dark room of a data center. And it was needed because of a number of reasons, like regulatory reporting, maybe, or understanding of what is the financial condition of the organization and what is the sales volumes, et cetera, et cetera. But now, I think there is a broader understanding data is a new gold. And that really is, by the way. So that's a big change. And also, well, this part of the world is always a little bit behind the developments in the Western world. But I would say over the course of the last 30 years, I'm in the business, this gap is shrinking. So we adopt quicker. And with the acceptance, overall acceptance of the cloud, particularly here in the Czech Republic, it was a very quick adoption of the concept. Data becomes way more accessible. And as I said before, the awareness of its value is getting to the front line.
But if you are mentioning that there's like the large awareness of the importance of data, do you believe that the cause for that is the AI hype? Because we've been talking about importance of data for years.
Not quite. To be honest, I think it's primarily driven by the competition. So three industries that are mostly of our interest, I mean, for now, at least in this part of the world, and obviously that's not universal to Snowflake, but just for this part of the world, is financial service industry, retail, e-commerce. So if you just stop with these three, the level of competition is really difficult to these companies. It's just very, very, very heavy competition. And then the new business models are required. Right, so we see it happening, right? So with the companies that are surfacing, such as, for example, Revolut, right? Then the traditional banking needs to somehow quickly adopt to a change. And not to mention e-commerce, that is all about speed, agility. I want this box to my doorstep in, you know, today, right, pretty much. So I believe a very, very aggressive and very... sometimes truly killing level of competition is one of the major drivers for looking into data and trying to build proper insights to accelerate businesses or change business models, because that also happens.
Can we introduce Snowflake, how Snowflake fits into that environment?
Yes, so, okay, so firstly, just on the business side, just to introduce the company a bit more, the company was funded 13 years ago, 2012, with three really data-savvy persons. Interestingly, one of the founders was a Polish person called Marcin Żukowski. And then 5 years ago, it was floated. So it was listed in the NYSE. And that was the biggest ever software IPO in the history of NYSE. So obviously it attracted the attention of everyone. And we raised slightly over $3 billion, having a share of $120 a piece. It was a big boom. It was a big bang. And the company itself is today's valuation is probably bouncing around $70 billion with roughly 8,000 people and several thousands of customers that pay us on a sort of, we call it capacity basis. So proper contract with a proper allocation of resources for them. And we grow in a significant two-digit manner over the course of last year's, I guess. Of course, we don't know, but I guess this year should not be different to that. Differently to some of our either partners or competitors, we increase our human power base. So our headcount grew 10% year on year. We keep hiring. So it is also good for people and for all of us to see it's all aligned with the growth. It's all aligned with the business growing, in line with the business growing. So that's more or less on the business side. As for technology, first of all, it is cloud native SaaS. So we don't have really any legacy or sort of past issues to be solved when we convert technology into the cloud. And that's we call ourselves, we have a tagline, actually kind of two. We call ourselves AI Data Cloud, and I guess AI will surface again today. But also, that was a little bit shocking to me when I joined I work for other well-established brands, because one of the taglines was, it just works. So very unusual for organization that is...
That's saying everything in one sentence. Well,
yes, I mean, but the reality is the way this technology works is exactly in line with the statement. So it just works, but it does work very well. And that's pretty much who we are. SaaS solution, very easily adopted, easy to work with, first of all. And it is also, I think it's the beauty of technology. It is very, very easy to prove its value to business stakeholders. Because joining the dots of, it's a new gold, there is a new gold, and how quickly they need to act in the marketplace upon a heavy competitive pressures, it's really important how difficult it is to introduce the platform. It is not, in our case, it is not. So that's the success.
What do you see as the biggest game changer according how companies handle their data in the past few months, maybe?
So, I'm here for 18 months, so several months. So look, I think I mentioned the awareness, and there is a growing level of awareness and under this sort of competitive pressures, just based on the example.
Yeah, you mentioned the competition.
Yeah, example of the three industries. Historically, data was very dispersed and built in and locked in and multiple silos in the organization.
Yeah, yeah.
So, engineering couldn't access financial data, financial couldn't access IT data, IT couldn't access, et cetera, et cetera. So, and that is a known problem, right? Until recently, when cloud technologies got that popular and companies like ours surfaced, it was really a struggle, internal struggle in these organizations. It was very difficult to build a common pool of sort of resource to dig in, build insights out of, and push business forward. And that was really, sometimes it was a drama, right? Not to mention, there was probably years ago, there was a lot of discussions. And for me, particularly coming from also hardware grounds, there was a lot of discussions of, you know, we got our data center, it's got to be here. And hey, you know, there is a public cloud opportunity, so maybe we go hybrid. And also somewhere in this journey, in this process, also data was kind of, you know, somehow related to it and evolving with it, which only made things more complex for data, right? So, and this conversion is always it's never easy. And it's never easy because, I mean, this path from the on-prem into the cloud is never easy to one-on-one. It takes time, changes, well, some of the internal procedures, processes in the first place need to be changed. So what we see now is companies are aware they need to build like one pool of data.
Yeah, you mentioned the data silos. What the data people mentioned a lot in the now is the democratization of data across the company. We were talking in this podcast many times about, for example, data mesh.
Yes.
Do you think or do you believe it's really possible to democratize the data in large organizations like banking, insurance, yes, telco? Do you believe it's possible?
I mean, look, there's probably multiple theories around it. Data mesh is the answer, I believe, kind of a half-step answer to it. Like in a longer-term scenario, probably all data should reside in one pool of one kind of reservoir of data. But then, as for democracy, right? There are roles in our democratic system, like you know, there are policymakers, there are citizens, etc., etc. So, if we and if anyone listening to it agrees with a statement like longer term, we will have this, you know, big containers of data that will be universal as for the, you know, technical accessibility, then of course the access to them needs to be even more restricted than today by modeling a sort of a role-based access principles. I don't believe, you know, having just one pool of data, including very sensitive data or data that need to be kept in a certain regime, assume they need to pop under certain clearance certifications, etc. Right? That people, not all people have access to all data, of course not. And I believe, ironically, all the mechanisms to access these data will be even more will be better defined and stronger. So one of the things that Snowflake is famous for is data governance, but also how we handle the ability of people to reach out and actually get access to their data. Because, you know, I don't see it really happening. People from the engineering teams of a given organization have access to financial or profitability data related to some particular piece of omni-channel. That simply is not something that is going to happen or is happening or will ever happen, I believe, personally.
And you mentioned second thing, that the rapidly changing landscape or environment of all these tools, data platforms, and the possibilities that the data leaders now have in their companies, yeah. How can they navigate through that landscape?
I had this statement ready for the past that I wouldn't like to be a CIO because of a number of choices, because of a number of paths you could exercise. So now I can only repeat, I don't envy a job to any CDO. No, it's really difficult. So from a kind of a business process development on the customers end, very often the whole story starts with the governance model, really. Mm-hmm. How shall we do it, right? How? Then there is a lot of probing. There is a lot of, you know, sort of seeking a proper adoption of a given technology to a given organization that could be driven by so multiple different factors, including internal politics, of course, power plays, etc. So that's normal. That's usual. That's us. That's us human beings. But I think what now becomes rather clear is there is no escape from public cloud. And that is because of, and obviously data management layer that sits on top of it in our case, or is built into it for the case of hyperscalers, there is no way to walk away from that because of multiple technology and
you mean walk away
reasons.
From what, from the public cloud or?
Yes. So public cloud is a destination. Now, what I privately, in a way, believe in is hyperscalers, they have a muscle, they have a size, like, you know, these organizations have, I mentioned we are 70 billion, but then the other organizations like hyperscalers, they have capitalization level of $2-3.5 trillion. So that's these are really big organizations. And the primary focus really at the beginning of the journey was to have as many customers on the platform as possible, of course. People like us, but also some others, that supplement our solutions or compete with us. These are usually, actually probably 100% of them. So that is the usually conversion, right? It's these are SaaS solutions. And I truly believe in, and that's what I 100% believe for Snowflake, I truly believe into a specialization. So we're very specialized. And whereas hyperscalers, they build the muscle on the volume and they generate enormous profits, putting them into a position of acquisition, then us, we need to prove super technical power kind of residing on top of their businesses, right? So what I believe longer term is going to happen is hyperscalers, we continue the play. They will try to deliver more and more SaaS type data management solutions, whereas smaller companies, mm-hmm. Then yet again comparing the market capitalization, will be more and more specialized in that domain and ultimately will win the race. In other words, similarly to you know, VMware story as an example today, Brocade, the volume of server deliveries, right? At the time I saw VMware first time, I thought, oh, servers are over, right? And I was that wrong. I mean, so wrong. 2 decades later, server delivers probably tenfold or something, whereas also VMware was very successful. So it's probably similar play which we participate at this stage, which is we deliver value, right, which will only speed up the business that is an underlying business, and that is hyperscaler IaaS or PaaS business. But I don't think, due to complexity of these large organizations, they will be able to compete with that speed with people like us, right? So, and that's pretty much the, you know, my view at this. And we can see it, like the superiority of our product and its composition, its design, it's really in minimum cases way ahead of what we are dealing with in the marketplace.
So, where do you see the future of Snowflake from that perspective? Like, is there any niche or specific industries you would like to win, if I can call it like
it's,
this?
It's a difficult question. I believe our primary competition will be SaaS type of competition. Of course, we're a SaaS company, but SaaS type of competition with other players rather than hyperscalers. Mm-hmm. Of course, hyperscalers, they have their own lever or leverage that sits behind. Obviously, they have also good technologies, but also behind commercial. Well, how they handle marketplace through the commercial arrangements. But I think longer term, a beautiful technology like ours is in a position to win. And I seriously mean that. I mean, when I say that, beautiful technology like ours, I understand beautiful, maybe it's not fit the overall.
Beautiful technology, it sounds like yeah. Big, beautiful bill, you know, like, yeah, be careful of that.
But that's how I feel. I mean, it is very pleasant technology to deal with. No, seriously, like very, very pleasant. It is, and I'm not only saying it because I'm representing Slovak, I think it's the experience of our customers. If you look at our NPS, by the way, the NPS is really crazy. I mean, crazily high. It's way higher than well-known, well-established, and recognized brands of this world. Bottom line, SaaS, of course, and technical superiority and easiness of making it usable for the businesses, of course. Lastly, there is probably a question mark about how fast and if at all companies like Snowflake and us in particular will move towards more of the apps play, applications play,
mm-hmm.
right? Because we provide a technology to deliver business goals to be consumable and easy to implement for the sort of engineering side of our customers. At the same time, we're so close to applications. We leave that close to applications. We also create space for applications like Snowflake as a platform offers its containers to host everyone, right? And an interesting, so the question is really how it evolves into the future, right? I'm not calling us the CRM company in any sense, of course. But then the question is really what's going to happen next? So that's kind of one. And two, I think it was Apple, when they launched the App Store, has anyone been, you know, sort of excited about it? Like, oh, it's going to change the world, but it changed the world, right? So in that context, Snowflake's got the largest data marketplace in the world. And the dynamic of that process is really amazing. So there are more and more players that move their data products or now their applications and technology into our space. So it also gives us a very strong, it makes us believe this is a right move because it's not us, right, doing this. It's them doing it. So our partners, companies that we don't even know sometimes because they created a product based on Snowflake and they now offer it into the platform, into the marketplace.
We didn't mention AI yet. And my feeling is that it starts to sound like AI washing, like AI is everywhere.
Yeah.
But seriously, where do you see the real power of AI in case of SaaS like Snowflake is?
I'm an engineer myself, so I graduated from the technical university and then continued postgraduate studies in business. But I'm an engineer myself, like it's in mm-hmm. my veins. And it was, I think, 1991, maybe two, when I got engaged into genetic algorithms, or I was very new at that time, or neural networks, etc. Mm-hmm. So I was very, very, I don't want to say careful about it. Well, definitely, I don't want to say skeptical about it. But I was like, it's not like AI is a new thing. It's not a new thing. It's been there around. It's been around for a long time. And I was really cautious. I joined a company with calling itself AI Data Cloud, and I thought, okay, let's see what it is right first. I was that wrong. I was completely wrong. I was really wrong. Now, firstly, I called Snowflake beautiful. Why is it beautiful in the AI context? It's because we have a completely different implementation model of large language models. It's very unique in the world. What we do...
From which perspective?
Okay, so we are like a... Okay, I don't want to call it foster house, but we invite LLM models into us.
Mm-hmm.
So if, for example, and it's maybe a little bit controversial, but when DeepSeek got announced, we made it available in Snowflake several weeks later.
Mm-hmm.
In a private preview, so people could test and play with DeepSeek and check what it is.
In a closed environment.
Within Snowflake, yeah. Right? So you don't need to walk your data outside of Snowflake.
Yeah, this is what I'm talking about. Environment, closed environment.
Yes, safe, governed, yeah. Etc. And, Snowflake was growing through acquisitions. Some companies acquired with Polish companies I can't recall the exact number, but I guess it's three. One of them was very, very AI-oriented company. So we got a lot of scientists that joined our team, Snowflake team. And when you ask them, really, when you're in discussion with people holding, PhD title in mathematics, and you get under the skin of how this model was trained, how it developed in the past, etc., it's really kind of a weird, it's a very weird feeling, right? There are so many models, and they have a completely different performance. Mm-hmm. Because they were trained differently, they experienced different digital life in the past. So now, there's no single model in the world that does a super job to everything it touches, right? So if you have all of them under your roof and you can play with them, right, then it may bring completely different business outcomes or technology outcomes, but primarily business outcomes. So that's number one. And that is a superpower of Snowflake. The second power, superpower, and by the way, these superpowers are not hidden. They could be tested. But the second superpower is 10 years ago, you probably needed definitely a large group of data scientists and thousands of documents to train the model. It's very difficult to get data scientists these days. It's a scarce resource. It's hard to get them. And today, training the model for a specific need of a given enterprise is done by domain specialists. So just to give an example, I'm talking to a head of legal in one of large financial institutions. And we're just having a discussion. It says, business discussion. It says, my problem is, just underline the word problem, not an issue, but problem is, I got like thousands of contracts with our customers to read and understand if this contract should be, what should do with the contract? Is it a good contract, bad contract, etc.? And these are like thousands of it, right? And I got some, few junior paralegals, legals, or students, they need to go through it and read it, and then to extract data, put them into our internal decision model to make a final decision. So the decision model is done. I just need to extract data, understand this data, and accelerate the process, because otherwise, we just can't meet our business KPIs. We can do it in a second today. I mean, seriously, like in a second. So these are seconds. And so you receive that unstructured data, you read them, analyze them, and you provide all of these decision-making points into you feed the decision-making model on their end that accelerates work at incredible speed.
Yeah, so maybe we are just now talking about AI agents, right? The AI agents application.
Yes, so, but coming back to a broader subject of AI, I think we have now quite a lot. So 40% of our customer base, they use our AI technology. And they use AI agent, the agents that you mentioned, because several of them that are ready. And deployment of it is completely in line with our statement being it just works, right? But then it works differently to Mistral, Mixtral, OpenAI, DeepSeek. It is different. Arctic, that is our own model. That is great to train the other models, right? So it's a very complex environment. But the thing is, say, call me disbeliever. Now I'm a complete convert because the speed of adoption of AI, but also efficiency of it. Some time ago, it was hard to get like maybe 40% of a precision in these processes. Now, having 80% of precision in the first run, like completely in blind attempt, it's not uncommon. It's really something that we experience pretty much, very often, right? So our customers using AI, they look. I mean, I know it is simplifying the thing, but they're just happy. That removes all of the burden. That removes all of the repeatable tasks, and it does so at volume. And it does so with a very, very minimal cost of implementation on the IT side.
Do you think this could be the main market driver for the data platforms evolvement?
There are several trends that we observe, and it's part of our strategy, obviously. But first of all, there are lots of migrations of the on-prem technologies, to the cloud happening now. And by the way, Central Eastern Europe is no different to the Western world, like in Europe. Okay, I'm not saying the States or the UK, these are completely different spaces. And so these are migrations, right? It takes time. It is expensive. It has to be done, right? AI is on a completely other side of this fence as for the adoption of our technology, because you can prove business value in a day for a value that definitely resides in our credit cards.
With all these data analysis, yes, and like getting the insight or fasting the, not time to market, but time to insights, can we call it like that?
Okay, so time to market, that's one thing. Time to insights is something I would like to comment on. But time to market, imagine you would like to have your contact center agent, right, to type a question into the existing chatter that's been deployed by the organization of any given vendor, to extract very precise and very sort of detailed information throughout a conversation that is an online conversation, right? We can deliver that type of agent instantly, just out of the box. And it learns so quickly, right? So that's, you know, market adoption is just at the pace of a speed light, right? The other thing is time to insight, because I was just thinking about it, like, you know, assume Czech government or Polish government, doesn't matter, any government would like to proactively run a campaign that is, say, cancer campaign or anti-cancer campaign, mm-hmm. right? So theoretically, you know, we can run like a quick health check of people, like, you know, relatively quickly, right? But then the question is, what is the size of the overall oncology system, right? And insights can be delivered very quickly, but how fast they can be actually activated in the existing system, we know it's not that easy. So some of the insights could be delivered in, you know, milliseconds, literally milliseconds, whereas the a proper activation of these insights may take years. And I'm not exaggerating. It could be 2 years. Like, imagine public sector.
But you've chosen government, maybe the most complicated environment, right?
Yes, true. Unfair. But even if you think of, say, I mentioned FSI, retail, etc. Even if you think of FSI, it's going to take time. I mean, you know, there is AI Act, right, that needs to be analyzed. For example, there are regulatory constraints and obligations that are put onto these institutions or commercial institutions. So all of this has to happen. And these are not small organizations. They're complex. It's also all about the existing processes that's been built, some of them years ago, procedures that were adapted to different type of environments, both business and technical. So speed of kind of deploying it is one thing, but then speed of activation of insights is the other thing. We can deploy ourselves extremely quickly.
Yeah, but it's not about technology then, right? It's about the mindset. It's about the organization hierarchy and rules and style of communication.
Of course. And very often in this part of the world, I don't want to get into details of the FSI system, right? But a lot of these businesses, local businesses, are dependent on decisions that are taken somewhere else. So headquarters are outside of our capital city. So this is also characteristics of this part of the world. It was pretty much growing on international investments over the course of the last three decades, right? So, there are lots of constraints of that nature, not necessarily technological nature.
What were the biggest misconceptions about data or data platforms that you ever heard?
Honestly?
Mm-hmm.
No, not really. I mean, you know, here is... You know, in this IT business, and I've been in it for some time, it is full of transformation all the time. So obviously technology evolves very, very quickly, and it's really hard
and
to catch up
with
it. Yes, and it does speed up, yes, all the time. So we should be very respectful to those that built systems 10 years ago. And very often particularly vendors, they see these either people or organizations, sometimes people really, they see it as an obstacle to progress, which is wrong, right? It's completely wrong. I mean, there are good reasons of why they feel that way or they think that way, but it's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a misconception, but then the reality is some of technologies that are currently, deliver and others to the marketplace are technologies, they really have to be treated with a little bit more of kind of, you know, ability to absorb. Because, and what I'm trying to get to is, it's not a misconception, but if there is a request coming from the business, we have to respond to competitive play in the marketplace, okay?
Mm-hmm.
At volume, at speed, and we have to change ourselves. and we hear it from primarily C levels. And then the response of IT is, okay, let's do it with the same tools, which is, for example, let's buy several GPU cards and let's accelerate this process. Let's get more data scientists on board. Let's build our own models sometimes. Well, I haven't had this, but maybe that would be a complete misconception. But then this will never happen. I mean, this will not be successful. So present technologies, they offer a completely different speed, precision, accuracy, etc. So in my opinion, in my personal opinion, going after, in maybe there are some specific cases within a specific, I don't know, like military industry, right? But maybe. Not necessarily, because like Snowflake is DoD IL5, so we actually have the certification at the top level of DoD, Department of Defense. But then trying to address this world with these sort of older class tools will not be successful and will fail. And the worst of all is it may fall with the people that build it. Within a different technological mindset a decade ago. And these are great people, right? So what we do, we provide a lot of education to the marketplace, right? Because you just can't respond as quickly as businesses need to respond in this competitive world. So it's not a misconception. It's rather, you know, how the evolution happens, and unfortunately very, very fast. So some people may have difficulty to keep with the pace.
Where do you see the future of platforms from your personal perspective? Platforms, data platforms in 2 years?
I don't know. No, seriously. I mean, if you look at... I don't know. If you look at all of the variables behind it, like, you know, capital place, who buys whom, how, also speed of release of some features. So last year in particular for Snowflake was like, we have released so many new features, or say, you know, products within a product effectively. We had, you know, us, right? We had difficulties as sales or pre-sales teams to really digest it.
But your customers...
They
are asking the same questions, right?
Yes, yeah, yeah. So I mean, you know, it's like to predict the outcome of the avalanche a little bit, right? So it's very hard. I think I said this before. I think SaaS will dominate the space. Data SaaS will dominate the space, and an AI attachment to it will be stronger and stronger and faster and faster. So obviously there are probably some risks associated with it, but to us as human beings, but this is unavoidable.
On the other hand, where do you see, or maybe Snowflake, see the biggest risk for the future? What makes you anxious?
I mean, at certain point, I mean, we already passed that chasm. Machines already became more performant than us people. And the problem is they became, in a way, more performant in spaces that were traditionally perceived as places of like human innovation. So the human brain and the human capacity like within the innovation space all of a sudden is now being replaced by what we can achieve with AI. So if you combine all of these factors, like, you know, like the sort of artificial brain and the speed of processing that is built in every single day, like, if you think of server deliveries, like, I think it is anything between 75 to 80% of servers go into the hyperscalers. It's not private data centers any longer. And it actually lasts for a couple of years already, right? So if you combine all of these elements, then it's really hard to predict. It's like way closer to a sci-fi movie than it's ever been. I think it's really like, you know, when you listen to some of these stories, like experiments with LLM models, model environments, and letting them sort of, you know, behave like a human being in a controlled way, it's a little bit, it is really sometimes confusing, sometimes scary. So there will be element of, actually these elements are building now, they've been built already, like AI Act, to control this space, maybe to tax this space. There are some voices in the industry that it should be taxed. There are some voices of the fathers of AI. It went just too far already. So see what happens. But honestly, that's more for the sci-fi writers. I don't feel really competent, and probably I don't have brains enough to envision of what may come.
Do you believe that you will be replaced by AI in some day?
I had a really smashing conversation with a bunch of 27-year-old kids, mm-hmm. actually half of my age, right? And so it's very much on a personal note, but here is the story. So they all graduated from the technical university, not necessarily computer sciences. And, they realized computer sciences is the future, so they started programming, coding. So here we go with a bunch of, you know, like 20, people under 30, starting their professional career, mechanical engineering primarily, but also people that are capable of, you know, dynamics, you know, liquid dynamics, optics, anything. Very, very capable young people. All of a sudden, they turned into programmers, right? So we see they were discussing, beer in hand, and they asked me, so they knew I was working mm-hmm. with Snowflake, and they asked me, so what was my job? And I told them, I'm a sales maker. Just ignore the title, I'm a sales maker. What I do is a professional sales maker. And they told me, oh, it is a great job to have. It is such a great job to have. And I asked them why. And they said, because it is safe and it's forever.
From their perspective, it's safe.
Yes.
To be in your role.
To be a salesperson. So if you think about it, you know, it's like goosebumps in your body, because everyone has opinion about salespeople, because we transact every day, right? We buy every day. Like, you know, I probably got like 3 transactions already today, and it's 1 p.m. So everyone has an opinion on salesperson. Salesperson, you know, everyone has an opinion, right? And I don't think 10 years ago anyone would say that. Like, it's great to have this job, it's a sales job. There is a surplus of goods in the world. And salespeople are to push them into the marketplace to get them sold. And the reason they said is, I ask them, what happened, right? Why are you saying this? They say, why are we going to be replaced by AI? Because we're juniors. And it's a very sad story, right? Because, but that is, it's a true one. It somehow touches me personally, because I'm a father of 2 boys, one of them 27, the other one 22. And somehow they actually within this CS space. So I'm concerned as a father. I don't know if our sort of parents' hopes for the policymakers and political, in other words, regulatory environment activity in this space, if this hope could materialize in any reasonable way. But I was concerned, and I was really, we discussed that at home with some other folks. And I don't know what to say, really.
Okay. Adam Wojtkowski, country manager for Eastern Europe from Snowflake. Adam, thank you so much for sharing your insights and being here with me in the studio.
Thank you, Ivana. It was a pleasure, and thank you for having me here.
Follow the Adastra Digital website on LinkedIn, Facebook, and most importantly, subscribe to this podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or Google. This is Iva Karhanová from Adastra, signing off.